What is up, AfterBuzzers? Welcome back to another episode of Leah Remini's Scientology and the Aftermath. Today we're going to be discussing Season 3, Episodes 6, 7, and 8, Ideal Orgs, the Collection Agency, and Gilman Springs Road. Financial and physical abuse were both exposed. We have a ton to talk about, so stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Listen,
I can't even get my groove on the way I wanted to in this.
I know, it's kind of sad, but there was so much about financials in these first two episodes. Yep. I was like, listen, it's also an excuse to hear Meryl Streep sing. Like, I'm going to be completely honest with you. What's up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode of Scientology in the Aftermath. We had a couple weeks break in there for the holidays, but we're back with a vengeance, better than ever. As always, I am your host, Taylor Gates. I'm joined by one lovely panelist tonight.
Hello, everybody. I am Jackie Ray.
What is up?
How you doing?
You know.
Welcome to 2019.
Welcome to 2019. It's starting with a bang.
It is starting with a bang.
I'm so happy to be back, though.
Yeah, me too.
I miss talking about this. Yeah. I feel like every time I watch it, I need to kind of decompress and get all my thoughts out with someone else, or it's just too much because there was a lot here to deal with.
Yes.
Well, what were your thoughts on these three episodes?
So, the money thing, I think we're all kind of used to. We've talked about that, several times throughout this show. But I will say, you know, for me, it's getting a little hard to watch. Not in like I don't love the series, because I absolutely love the series. But there's a certain amount of frustration where you hear all these people telling their stories over and over and over again. And, you know, there's a moment in this week where I was like, okay, come on with the tears. I can't with the tears. But I definitely got teary-eyed, and I definitely feel these people's pain, and nobody is doing anything. It's like, how much more do people have to really come out and tell the truth about this before somebody does something?
That's the really frustrating part, I think, because Leah Remini and, you know, her whole team has been doing such a great job of spreading awareness, and I think has just brought so many of these issues to light. But you can spread awareness, you know, all you want, but it's kind of out of her hands at this point. Because we actually have to have the authority sort of involved to actually be able to shut all this stuff down. Let's go back and talk about a couple weeks ago, the episode that aired that was sort of focusing on ideal orgs. And so we have touched on ideal orgs before this episode, but we kind of honed right in and told some personal stories having to do with them.
Right.
So ideal orgs, just to sort of refresh, are these huge churches, and they, you know, Scientology says that they are going to offer the full service to all their parishioners, and they're going to establish so much community outreach and do so much good, and that isn't really what happens. Like, these are built, but they're more of status symbols, and they're always empty, you know, inside. No one's ever really in the parking lot or really functioning inside there. And so it just kind of reiterates the fact that they're not putting money in the correct places. Like, it's all about appearances. What did you kind of think about this episode overall?
I mean, I kind of thought it went back to, you know, a couple weeks ago when we talked about the Inglewood center that they built there. And one of the survivors from that said that she, you know, went in there and there was literally only like two people in there at a time. And, you know, we hear this message over and over again that the sake of the planet rests in those who are Scientologists. And it always leads me back to, yes, you're getting this money. Yes, you have this tax exempt status. But what exactly is it that you're doing? You know, and you get these little nuances here and there, but I think that's a good cover for any organization. You know, when you have these good covers, like when you give back to, you know, hurricane relief, or you offer drug rehab, and I'm doing that in air quotes because their drug rehab it's not an actual thing. But when you have these little covers, then it makes you look like you're actually doing things. But when you really get down to the nitty gritty, you're not doing anything. So where's all this money going?
Yeah, exactly. And on sort of a more personal level, we did, you know, get some personal stories. We got Bert Shippers was one that they talked to a lot, and his story was just so upsetting. I mean, he donated all of this money to the Seattle Ideal Org. It was one of like the biggest ones that they had built and one of the places that they were really focusing on. And he ended up donating thousands and thousands of dollars and was promised that he would get his name on the plaque. And, you know, time after time, things just sort of happened and he kind of fell out, you know, with the church. And even though he wasn't super directly involved with Scientology anymore, he went to the grand opening and wasn't even allowed inside.
That's crazy.
It's just that pettiness. And one quote from that episode that really stuck out to me is that he was like, I can't do this anymore because I'm having to even borrow money from people. Like, this isn't even my income anymore. And people who are taking this money from people are taught that, you know, oh, he could get out of debt in 1.5 years if he donated this amount of money. So they can do more. They just don't want to. And that's insane. Like, these people are going into debt and still Scientology is putting pressure on them to give more and more and more. That's just crazy.
You know what? And again, I only went to a few classes for Scientology, so I don't have the frame of reference on that, you know, that is in depth. But I was raised devout Christian. And as much as I know we're saying how bad Scientology is, and I'm not talking bad about Christians. I'm just saying from my personal experience, you hear this all the time. You'll go into a church and they'll say, you know, give 10% which is your tithe, you know, give 10%, because if you give 10%, God is going to bless that 90% even more bountiful than if you had that 100%. Meanwhile, your lights is being cut off, because you know what I mean? So it's like, or you'll go to church and they'll say, you know, God is speaking to my spirit right now, and there's 10 members in here who can give $1,000. And maybe there is, but there's also those people who can't. And there's that certain amount of guilt, you know. So although, you know, we're definitely talking about Scientologists, it's not a new scheme. You know, people have been doing this forever. And I think maybe Scientologists have definitely shifted it to more of a physical aspect, you know what I mean? But it's the same song and dance we've seen for years.
Yeah, absolutely. And something else I just wanted to touch on just about that episode, because it just goes back to that whole playing on emotions and kind of doing the song and dance to sort of get what you want and manipulate, is they really touch on the fact that they use children to kind of inspire other people. So if a kid is like, oh, I'm going to give all the money in my piggy bank, they like encourage that, which is in a way, like, I don't know. It's all about playing on the emotions. It's like, oh, if this little kid can do it, then of course, then I can give more, and just sort of using them as puppets in a way, which is just really sort of sick. You just have to find that balance, because yes, it is great to teach your kids to, you know, donate for a worthy cause and things like that. But when you're using them to exploit other people and exploiting the kids themselves, that's where you have to draw a line. And that's really,
it's where you should
disgusting.
Draw the line.
Exactly.
But if you're trying, if your end goal is to manipulate, then absolutely. It's Girl Scouts. Sometimes I don't even want the cookies. I don't even eat cookies. But every time I see a Girl Scout, okay, give me 3 boxes.
That's
because
so
they're cute kids, you know, and you just don't want to disappoint them. So, I mean, I get that.
Yeah, and it goes back to the guilt thing. It's like, oh, well, if they can do it, then surely I can do more too.
Right.
So moving on to the next episode of it, we just have a lot to cover tonight, so we're kind of going a little quickly.
We just talked about
kids, and I thought it was really sad. They only touched on it for just a second or two, but in the next episode, they talked about how so many elderly people remain in the state organization because they haven't made money those past couple years and they don't have an education. And I think that's also just so sick. Like, in the same vein, you're literally trapping these people, and they are older and they're helpless in a different way, and they can't get out of this because they have absolutely no resources. What did you kind of think of them preying on, you know, the older crowd as well as the children?
I mean, I think it's a kind of a bookend situation. You know, you get them young and you get them old, and then everybody in the middle will kind of follow. Am I going to be really inclined to leave the organization if my mom, my grandmother are still in it? And if I have a child that's in it, and I'm married and my husband is devout in it, and I know he's not going to let me take my kid. So I think, again, and I know I say this all the time, I think a lot of what they do is unethical and it's morally bankrupt, but it's definitely genius, because, you know, at the end of the day, if your family means the most to most of us. And so if you put me in a situation where I have no, like you said, no education, no, I mean, what am I going to do? Even if I get out, if all of my family is in Scientology, what am I going to do? Who's going to help me?
Exactly.
I have nowhere to go.
Yeah, we saw that a lot with Heather Ruggieri and her mother. Just her sort of personal story did tie into the theme of kind of elderly people getting, you know, trapped in these positions. So her mom got an inheritance of $77,000, and of course Scientology pressured her to donate it, and so she no longer had access to that money. And so when she did finally get out, she had no resources and no money, and she's in her 70s and still having to work, and she's going to have to work the rest of her life just because of, you know, the past, you know, things that she did. So even when you do manage to get out, it's like not over, like it's still haunting you in certain ways, which is just so, so upsetting. And the fact that her mom wouldn't even go on Leah's show because she still has some weird, you know, seed attachment, of hope,
right,
is just crushing. It's the brainwashing just goes so, so deep.
I think that was my fear about the whole elderly thing too. For one, you kind of would hope that more elderly people, and as tragic as it sounds, you don't want a whole bunch of elderly people losing thousands upon thousands of dollars because that's what they have to live on. But at the same time, there are laws in place to protect the elderly from scams like this. So if you had a whole bunch of them come out and say, hey, I had this money and now they took it all, I wonder if then, because at this point, I'm just wondering what else has to happen to get the authorities involved. And would it be, if we had elderly abuse, would that help? I mean, I just don't know.
That's so true, because there is just so much evidence. Right. And we'll get into it more in tonight's episode, but there is just so many people, you know, having their testimony out there, and yet nothing really seems to be changing quite yet. I do want to talk about a couple more things in that episode, because that the second episode of tonight was really packed full of sort of just a lot of different things and a lot of different stories. Another thing that really struck me was just the amount of unused services. So people pay up front a lot in Scientology because they have to, you know, buy the books and buy the course, you know, way, way ahead of time. And there, in 1993, I thought this statistic was crazy. In 1993, this was only one organization, this person who was in charge of this organization was only in charge of one out of 150. And keep in mind that this was in 1993. This person testified and said that $450 million in unused services that the Scientology had. If you multiply that by 150 and just keep in mind that this was in 1993,
right,
like the amount of money that they must have accumulated by now just from unused services alone has to be insane. Like, that's just another way that they are just scamming people, essentially.
But again, where is the money going?
Exactly. These ideal orgs, I think, is a big one, just because they cost millions and millions of dollars. It's all about appearances. Like, nothing is going towards actually fixing the root of any problem. It's all putting, you know, a coat of paint on something that is falling apart behind it, essentially.
Because here's what I think. Even regardless of, you know, what you think about Scientology, I think it would be easier to not believe some of the things that we are hearing if each and every one of us had a story of like, oh girl, no, there was this one time where I was flat broke and I walked into a Scientology center and they helped me. Or, you know, the homeless population is all of a sudden, they've built a center specifically for them because they have all this money. If they were constantly doing good, it would be harder to be like, oh yeah, they're just here. But there's no evidence, you know what I mean? And if there's all this, if you've amassed all this money, I don't know. I just need to see something.
Something good coming out of it.
Right.
And we're not seeing anything
right
like that. Another story I want to touch on really fast is Tyler Adams, who was a Sea Org member, and he participated in the sort of demolition activities, so more of the construction and that sort of aspect. And the fact that Scientology wouldn't even invest in, like, the correct tools for these people working, like, they didn't have hard hats or glasses, like, their safety was not a concern whatsoever, clearly. And he had to go to the hospital, like, every 6 months or so because of a different industry, and they didn't care. Like, they don't care about anyone's safety. And I thought his story was so sad because he obviously has an eye patch now. Like, he will never be able to regain sight in that eye, all because of the neglect and having no training. And, you know, this is not what he went to school to do or anything. They just kind of throw people wherever they feel like throwing them and don't even take into consideration what their skills and talents are.
Which, again, brings me back to what has to happen. There's OSHA regulations that says when you're building anything, I don't care if you're putting a little ramp at your house, you know, there's codes, there's permits, there's OSHA regulations. It has to be safe. If people are actually handling tools, they have to be trained. Someone from the city needs to come out and check you. What? Who's? How is this happening? How are they just able to just willy-nilly all this stuff and nobody's checking anything? That's crazy.
It is absolutely crazy. And the fact that, like, just rubbing salt in the wound is the fact that they actually charged him for his quote-unquote training that he got that was job-specific, the construction training. And so he had to pay that in addition to the enormous freeloader's debt that they have. So that's thousands of dollars for getting injured on the job. It's just absolutely crazy. And
the freeloader debt is a huge scam, too. I'm not freeloading. You're making me do all this craziness.
It's just, they can just charge for anything and everything, and they do, and they just have all of these resources available to them and all these fancy lawyers that just makes it so they can do whatever they want. It's just, it's so upsetting. And I think the episode tonight was the most upsetting because it's dealing with, like, actual physical abuse of people, which is just, I think, on a whole nother level. Like, scamming people out of money is terrible, of course, but actually, like, physically you're hurting them. It's just a whole, almost another ball game, in my opinion. Let's talk a little bit about tonight's episode that really focused on the gold base and kind of exposing the things that went on there. They got a ton of people who used to be very, very high level in this organization. And I'm always amazed by how many people they managed to get who were sort of at the top of the food chain, so to speak. They had the Headleys, they had the Scobies, they had Mike Render, obviously, talking just about what happened at these international headquarters. So basically, we learned a little bit about the gold base earlier this season, but essentially, Miscavige took it over after L. Ron Hubbard died in the late 80s, and it was established as a sort of safe area for Hubbard, and sort of to just make it so that seemed legitimate, they put up a guard gate and all of these, you know, spiky things on the fence and motion sensors.
Microphones in the ground.
Yeah, what was your reaction to kind of all of that?
My first reaction was, I need to know where this place is at in case the zombie apocalypse happens, because I am going there. Point. That's where I will be. So that was my first initial reaction. But then after that, I kind of thought, you know, I honestly, much like our commander in chief, I think that something's mentally off. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of reach the point where, yeah, this person is not a good person, but something's not firing right, because that level of security for a person who swears that he and his followers are going to be the one who changes the world doesn't make sense. It almost makes sense to have the spikes. So if you try to jump the fence, right? Because, yeah, maybe, you know, we want to protect our parishioners and we want to protect the people here. But to have that level of security if you jump the opposite way is weird.
It's almost both directions, too, yeah. Because it is sort of, like, so to speak, protecting the parishioners. But it goes both ways. It's a prison and sort of a barricade from the outside world. And another thing that was insane to me was the fact that this is like 4 or 5 miles from other civilization. And so even if you were to sort of jump the fence, you have to walk 4 or 5 miles. And you have to call reception before dialing any number, including 911, which lots of this can't be legal, but that definitely can't be legal.
Right. But it makes sense, though, because if I'm beating you up, I don't want you to just be able to get 911 immediately. I want somebody to be like, oh, no, sweetie, you're fine. Just take your beating.
True.
You know, so it makes sense. The whole thing is just weird. And I would just love to actually just understand David's mindset and one of the things that I found really perplexing is I could almost see the logic in if you really hold your higher ups to this amazing level, they eat well, they get to dress well, they get the cell phones, they can come and go kind of thing. And then your lower parishioners kind of seeing that and saying, oh, if I act accordingly, if I obey all the rules, that could one day be me. But for it to be the opposite, and it's the lower people who really don't get beat, and then the executives do, why do you stay, low guy? Like, what are you aspiring to? Are you aspiring to that? I don't understand the logic.
I think it's just sort of a reign of fear and like a reign of terror in a way. It's what they called it on the show. Like, oh, if he has no problem beating this guy, like he had will definitely not have problem beating me or doing this to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like seeing that you can make the most powerful people so vulnerable does create this culture of just being terrified in every which way. They used a couple terms. They introduced a few in this episode. I was like learning sort of the new terms because their whole vocabulary is...
It's like another language.
It is. It's very interesting. It's very militarized in a way. So they had a threat list was one of the terms they used. So if people were even having thoughts about leaving or were disagreeing, you know, with David Miscavige, there would be a threat list sort of about, you know, people to watch out for, people to maybe interrogate and just find out more about them. And I thought it was also interesting that people were implicated sort of in their, you know, spouses or family members' crimes in a way. Scobie was talking about how her husband, you know, went to an event that he wasn't supposed to go to. And so she was actually penalized for it as well. That's just, I think, another way of having that culture of fear and, you know, holding, you know, other people accountable for other people's actions is sort of that tattletale like society that they've talked about earlier as well.
Yeah, you can't have any alliances, no matter if it's family or what. You can't. Your only alliance can be to David Miscavige and the Church of Scientology. And that's weird.
It's very weird. And the fact that they would go to any lengths possible to keep people in this organization. We learned also about blow drills, which scared me, honestly, to hear about. I mean, all of this scares me, but this was like just the mental picture of it really kind of freaked me out. So it's any measures they'll go to, you know, get Sea Org members back if they do manage to escape. And there's like 50 people who go and look at the trains, look at the bus stops, look at the, you know, hotels, hospitals, their family members' house, look at their phone records. They do not leave any stone unturned. Like, they will find these people in one way or another. And I don't even know how you could escape all, like, 50 against one. That's so excessive. What was your reaction to that? Were you as kind of freaked out about that as I was?
I mean, this whole show freaks me out, if we're going to be honest. That's why I love it, because it's like, oh my goodness. But I think that part didn't freak me out as much as it made me go, aha, maybe this is why the FBI is having a hard time.
Because they're so organized.
Because they're so organized, number one. And number two, let's say you're Special Agent Taylor, and all of a sudden you're investigating Church Scientology. Now I have all these people at my disposal who will do anything I say. Now I'm going to your family, your friend. None of us are squeaky clean. Mm-hmm. I just don't care enough. Like, you can tell people, I don't care. You can tell people anything about me. But not all of us are like that. Some of us have jobs where we're making millions of dollars a year. Some of our whole families rely on us. So the thought of maybe losing my job or my status or anything like that, like the little piece that I just wondered, that instantly came to my mind when I saw that they just have these people at the ready to do this to their members. They got to have people at the ready to investigate people who are trying to speak badly about them.
Yeah.
It just makes sense.
That's a really good point. I hadn't really thought of that, but of course you would be sort of intimidated just by that sheer organization and that sheer power. And they are very organized. They're smart about it. They have a good friend of or a family member of the person kind of try to talk them back. And Miscavige is so sort of integrated into this day to day. Like, he's so plugged into what's happening every morning. That's how he starts off his day, is tell me a list of people who blew. So he knows where the sort of cracks are and where the vulnerabilities are. Like, he is playing a smart game, as sick as that is.
I want to go to the room where they have everything he's ever said and done recorded. I want to get into that room and just read. And it's weird to me. Why would you even have someone around documenting everything you say and do when you got to know you're crazy? I mean, regardless of, you got to know you're crazy.
I feel like they look at it as sort of sacred words, though, you know, like, oh, we have to preserve this knowledge that's coming out of him. I feel like that's how they view it. I mean, because we learned about the gold discs and things that they have been putting in these indestructible places. I think that that's sort of just an extension of it in a way. Another thing I found really, really sad about this episode is they do have to get permission to go off camp or campus or whatever they call it. And the limitations are really, really strict for that. Like, they wouldn't let someone visit their father who had had a heart attack. They really discourage going to funerals.
Right.
Just the fact that you're cutting people off that much for, you know, their family members when something is that serious is, like, it's not a game anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, that just is really telling in a whole other level, I feel like.
Yeah, I thought that it was troubling too. And I do understand the willingness of just the average person to kind of dismiss this whole Scientology thing altogether. Because for the most part, I mean, we've definitely covered episodes where we are talking about children. But for the most part, we are talking about adults. And we are talking about adults that even by the FBI raid in the 70s, half of them didn't want to say anything bad about this organization. So I do understand how it is difficult to say, okay, they can't be all that bad because people are just not leaving. As many people as we have talking about this, there's twice that never will. So I thought it, you know, I found that interesting. And I just, you know, it's just one of those things that as we go on and on, I just don't know. I just don't know how this is going to end.
I don't either. I hope it ends so it gets shut down. But mm-hmm. I mean, who even knows? They're so, like we kind of discussed earlier, they just are so good about organizing. And another thing that struck me about this episode is the first thing they do when they get to this camp is they do PR training and they get their story straight and they learn to be super vague when talking to all the authorities. And they just create this culture of drilling it into you. This is what you say if you're ever asked about this.
Which we saw at the end when the wives, they said the same line. He's with me all the time. I know every inch of his body. Like they said the same exact line.
That's such a telltale. When you use language that's so specific like that and have it repeated, I really caught that too. And I was like, you know that this line was completely fed to them.
I watched The First 48 a lot. I watch a lot of crime TV a lot. And you always hear these detectives come out of these interrogations and they're reporting back to their boss or their lieutenant or whatever you call them. And they're saying, what do you think? And when it's rehearsed, that's the first thing. Oh, he's very rehearsed. Which always makes them dig deeper. So the fact that these women appeared on national TV completely rehearsed and no one wanted to look deeper. Somebody is intentionally, in my opinion, intentionally turning the other way.
Yeah, I mean, at the beginning of the season, we had the whole special about how the IRS was sort of manipulated in a way. And I feel like the same thing has to be going on here. Like, I feel like Miscavige has his connections. He knows powerful people in really high places and has the money to pay people off when he needs to. And I think that's definitely what's happening here. I thought it was interesting to see the footage of the women juxtaposed next to the footage of dozens of ex-Scientology high-ranking officials discussing what happened there, because theirs was clearly not rehearsed. They had lots of different instances, you know, pushing against a cabinet, thrown in the hole, all of this different stuff. It was such a wide collage of things almost, and it's just, it feels so much more authentic. And you know, why would they have reason to lie? Like, they were kind of joking at the end of this episode, like, we don't pay you, we pay you in brownies or whatever you
and
get.
And not even laced brownies, yeah, just regular old brownies.
It's just, oh.
I wanted to say hey to everybody in the live chat. We see you. Feel free to say hello. Let us know what you think. There's a lot to process in this episode, I think, and, you know, especially because of the physical abuse. It seems like that's our culture right now, that we're all having to deal with physical abuses that, you know, if we were going to be honest with ourselves, have been around for a while. This, somebody has known about this in some form or fashion since the 70s. So we can't really say, oh, we didn't know. Yes, no, you did. You did. And, you know, even with a lot of the other series that we cover here on AfterBuzz, that are covering physical abuse. Yeah, no, you knew, but I just think the climate now is we need to get this out.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's so sad that there are so many people still left in here. This episode, I think, was really full of the like letters that Scientology sends in saying, you know, this never happened. Right. You know, this was completely fabricated. And it's just, it's awful. And they use these people's words when they are getting, you know, debriefed or interrogated sort of against them, even though it was said under this sort of immense pressure. And it's just so much is happening. And it was a pretty somber
It's emotionally
ending.
Draining,
it
right? It's very emotionally draining. But After Buzzers, good news for you, because our network produces after shows for nearly all your favorite TV shows, from dramas, reality TV, sci-fi, and more. There is no network that works harder for you, the television fans. But we do need your help. We are asking that you please subscribe to one or more of our YouTube channels. And by subscribing to our channel, YouTube will suggest content that is tailor-made for you, and you'll help AfterBuzz continue to grow. And if you're worried about those pesky notifications, don't be, because they are optional. So hit subscribe right now for this channel and check out our other AfterBuzz YouTube channels as well. Let us know that you did so right now in the live chat. We will shout you out. And for now, thanks for being the best fans and helping us be the ESPN of TV talk. If you need an upbeat show
after this,
go out and find one, because I definitely think this one was emotional draining. But don't worry, because AfterBuzz has got you covered.
Yes, thank you so much. I totally agree. You might need a little, you know, double feature and have something a little bit of...
Yeah, like when I watch horror movies, I have to go watch a comedy before I go
to
bed. It just has to happen that way.
Exactly. So yes, this episode did end a bit somberly, of course, because there is so much left to investigate and so many actions left to take. And, you know, they were talking about missing their families, missing their parents. And
that was my favorite part. Although I did cry a little bit. I was like, fan the tears. Because Leah asked the question that I think I've asked this whole time, like, okay, nothing is happening. Why are you guys still talking about this? And I understand from personal experience, you just have to keep raising awareness. But when she was like, because we're hopeful that one day I can see my mom again. I just couldn't, like, my heart literally hurt for her at that moment. It literally did. And there was another moment where I didn't get teary eyed, but it definitely affected me. Just seeing somebody that you spent decades with, that you love, that you vowed till death do us part. I get it. Bitterness. I don't like half my exes. But at the same time, if I saw them getting physically abused, I just couldn't stand by and let that happen. And I most certainly couldn't defend the abuser. I wouldn't be able to do that. Because where's the love at that point? I don't know. It's troubling to me.
It is. It's terrible. But yes, thankfully they are speaking out and they have found each other, which is so important to have that sort of, you know, community to sort of just get readjusted to the outside world again. And this is a very specific experience. And I don't think it's something a lot of people can relate to on such a deep level. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that they have each other as a sort of support group and community is just really beautiful. And I think that people are going to continue to filter out slowly but surely, and they will have, you know, these people waiting for them when they do. So we will end it even on a hopeful
note.
Let's go into our special segment,
okay,
shall we?
Okay, let's do it. So, you want to do news?
Well, we'll do special segment first. So we'll do our celebrity Scientologist
of the week.
Because there are...
I forgot about the celebrity Scientologists.
There are so many. This person is actually still in Scientology. Juliette Lewis. She's in a ton of movies and shows. I'm sure that you know her face, even if you don't know her name. She was in August, Osage County, Cape Fear. She's now on the show Camping and The Conners. She does some guest appearances, so she's in a ton of stuff. She's actually a second-generation Scientologist. Her late father, actor Jeffrey Lewis, was a longtime member of the church. This seems to be a really reoccurring pattern, but she actually credits Scientology for helping her quit drugs, which a lot of celebrities have said, which is kind of interesting thing that's starting to emerge. And she is speaking out a lot about how, you know, big pharmaceutical companies over medicate children with ADHD, over medicate mothers with postpartum depression, is sort of speaking out about that, because Scientology does have that, you know, sort of mindset that that's not a good thing and that we should all do things naturally and with Scientology processes, which, okay.
Sometimes it doesn't work.
Sometimes that just...
I'm trying natural deodorant right now, and I can tell you, it doesn't work.
Yeah, something, sometimes, you know, with certain mental health issues, medication is where you need to turn, and there's no shame in that.
I agree that kids are over-medicated. I agree that just because a kid is overactive, sometimes... they wanted to put me on ADHD medication. My mom was like, no, she's going to go outside and run around and play.
Yeah, there's a line.
You know, so yeah, I get it. I get that it's easier, especially sometimes for doctors, especially since that's the trend, to just say, oh, we're just going to medicate them. I'm not disagreeing with their ideology in that. I've known women who suffered from postpartum depression, and I've known women who have tried to get out of it naturally and failed to a point where it literally changed their lives. So I would never tell that woman, you can't take postpartum medication. I would never tell a family who's tried everything for a kid that has disciplinary problems that you can't try medication. I'm not saying it works for everyone, and I do feel like we go to that too quickly. But sometimes.
Absolutely. There's no umbrella term or blanket statement that will work for everyone. Mm-hmm. And I think people just need to respect that and kind of, you know, respect that you know what's best for you and,
right.
and things like that. But yeah, that was our celebrity spotlight Yay. Of the week. Let's go into some news because you have some wild stuff to share.
I do. And, you know, this just came out 10.
Ooh. AfterBuzz.
Yeah, that was loud and aggressive. That was.
I love the loud and aggressive. Okay, so this just came out 10 hours ago, you guys. So I'm pretty excited about this. But it seems that the smear campaign, we knew it was coming. We knew the smear campaign against Leah was going to eventually start. And it started in the worst way because there was a Taiwanese man and he died at the Church of Scientology's headquarters in Sydney on January 3rd. And the church says it is all Leah's fault. It is Leah and A&E's fault. I have to.
How?
I love your face. I love your face. Okay, so I have to. The church issued a letter on January 11th, and it says, and I quote, "For years, A&E's executives ignored our warnings that the series was inspiring bigotry and violence. You knew what you were doing. Your intent was to stir up hate and turn it into cash. Now someone has been murdered. Your indifference and obsession with stirring hate underwrote his murder."
Whoa.
So they're saying that he, you know, this would-be murderer, whoever he was, they opened up his computer and he was on an anti-Scientology website. And the last link he opened was a link to Leah Remini's Scientology and the aftermath.
That's
Thereby,
crazy.
It is her fault that this man was murdered.
Wait, was this the murdered man a Scientologist even?
The murdered man died. They didn't say that, but I'm assuming he was because he was at the Church of Scientology facility in Sydney. And he was murdered by the man who apparently one of the last things he watched was Leah Remini in the aftermath. Yeah.
That is so crazy.
I mean, that's a reach.
That's a reach. Reaching for something, but really, that's kind of scary.
I mean, but we always hear about that when people do like mass shootings and stuff. They look at their manifesto or their browser history. So I could see what they're trying to do. But again, it's a reach.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that. I'm anxious, I guess, to see how that plays out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so because this is a documentary series, obviously we can't really do predictions, but I feel like they're going to maybe keep this theme of the financial abuses and the physical abuses that seems to have been a recurrent theme thus far in season 3, but I'm really excited to keep learning more. I learn something new every single week on the show, and I feel like I'm, you know, Scientology expert now, for better or for worse.
Yeah, we're getting there.
But thank you guys so much for joining us. Where can everyone find you on the social media?
You guys, you can follow me on all things social media, especially Instagram. That's where I hang out the most, at JRayTheFanatic.
And you guys can find me on Twitter at Alphaba_Anne, on Instagram at Taylor_Gates_. Thank you guys so much for joining us, and we will see you next week.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.